All right, everyone, welcome back to Empire. We have, I actually don't even know what to call you today. I was going to say, we have the person formerly known as Chainlink God on the show. So CLG, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, appreciate being here.
Big day for you, huh? So this we're recording this on Thursday, but this will go live on Monday. And so folks will be hearing this on Monday. Big day for you.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a long time coming. Maybe it's a bit of a shock to some people, but it feels like the natural evolution of CLG or Zach now, I guess.
That's great. So, okay. So for people who don't know, you are Chainlink God on Twitter and you are doxing today. Maybe give us the, yeah. I mean, why are you doing this right now? Like what is the, your name is Zach Rhines. I see by this thing. Like what are you doing here? What's the reason for this?
Yeah. I feel like pseudonyms in crypto are very common. Everyone has a different reason for using pseudonyms. In the Chainlink community, a lot of people come from 4chan or Biz, or like that was like the roots of the community. So like being anonymous was always the natural state of things. Being a frog on Twitter is like, that's a way of signaling that you're a Link Marine, you're in the Chainlink community. But now that I see the crypto industry is maturing and just rapidly accelerating, Bitcoin, I think the Bitcoin ETFs are significantly legitimizing our industry and Chainlink's working with these huge institutions. I felt like it was natural to evolve the identity, because it opens up a lot of opportunities and a lot of doors. Because I always see my account and what I do is just fundamentally education, educating people about Chainlink, about the industry, why people should care about smart contracts. And there's certain venues like speaking at conferences or going to different in-person events or going on podcasts like these where being an in frog is not necessarily the best way to represent myself all the time. And people have preconceived notions about what Pepe and frogs are, whether it could be misguided, but in general, this just opens many more doors and many more opportunities. So nice. This is like it's an acceleration of what I've been doing. And I think that's exactly what an industry needs as we see so many people start to step in this bull cycle.
Nice. So who is Zach Rhines? Like where do you live? Like, do you have a job? Do you work in crypto? Is Chainlink God your full-time thing?
Yeah. So I live on the West Coast in the US, and I was originally actually going to school for computer science. When I first joined the crypto ecosystem, like early 2018. So that's more of my background and how I looked at crypto in the first place. But over the years, and really when COVID hits, the quality of the education just fell off a cliff. And I started diving more and more into crypto, like more and more full time. And I was learning way more in crypto, just being in the middle of the arena, so to speak. And I didn't feel like I was getting a whole lot out of what I was doing in my like traditional career path, which is just going to end at like some desk job of computer engineering, which is fine if that's what you enjoy. But for me, crypto is just such an entertaining and very interesting and very just like intellectually interesting industry to be in that I just started living in crypto full time. So I've been a community ambassador with Chainlink. Now I'm more of a community liaison, which effectively just means I'm a bridge between the Chainlink Labs team and the community. I've contributed content to Chainlink on the Chainlink blog itself, but like educating about Chainlink and educating about our industry is effectively what I spend the vast majority of my time on now.
What are I'd love to hear like the origin story of Chainlink God. My story with Chainlink, just to fill you in, is actually I was pre Blockworks days. I was sitting next to this guy named Mike at work. I was he was on the sales team at this company called SciSense where I worked before Blockworks, and he would spend time on 4chan. And he was the first one. I was like into Bitcoin stuff, but he was the one who kind of got me into like the whole ICO craze in 2017. And he's like, there's this thing called Chainlink and it's going crazy on 4chan. It's like everyone is talking about it. And that was kind of my entry into Chainlink. And so I'd love to hear both like your personal story in the Chainlink community, but also like how Chainlink God kind of came to be.
Yeah. So I stumbled on crypto like early 2018, and that was through, I saw GPU prices were just crazy at the time. And I discovered you can run a program on your computer that basically spits out money. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. I have to figure out how this works. So I got orange pilled with Bitcoin at that point. I looked into CoinMarketCap and I saw that every token that exists basically was on Ethereum. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. What's Ethereum? So I started diving into smart contracts. And at that point, it clicked for me why smart contracts are a better format for every digital agreement. But what didn't click for me was how smart contracts are supposed to be useful for any real world use case if you needed to connect external resources, which smart contracts can't do natively. So I intuitively felt like I didn't have a name for it at the time. I didn't dive deep enough at then, but like I knew there was this Oracle problem. If I have a mortgage agreement tokenized, how does it know what the house is worth, where it is, the condition of it, like all that metadata property? And so at the time, I got a lot of my crypto info from Reddit, which was not a good location for crypto info.
Same with me, actually. Yeah.
In hindsight. But I heard that 4chan had a business and finance board. I'm like, oh, 4chan and crypto, like that's got to be a good story. And actually, the first day that I went on there, there was this thread discussion about the institutional use case of smart contracts, basically explaining you need connectivity to backend systems, you need these data inputs, you need to be able to connect all these chains together. And it was basically explaining what the role of Chainlink was. And back then, Chainlink was just a white paper. And the team at the time didn't do any marketing. So it was just this community of frogs talking about this project, this recent token called Chainlink. And it immediately clicked for me at that time. Like, okay, if crypto is going to really change the way society works, it needs Chainlink. It needs these connections to the external world. It needs to connect all these chains together. It just needs this connectivity. And so all of like 2018, I was just absorbing information basically on Biz, on Twitter, and all these different locations of like Chainlink was created by a company called Smart Contract. And Smart Contract has actually been operating since about 2014. And they were building centralized oracles back then. And they did different proof of concepts with Swift, with Microsoft, and they had like connections to DocuSign. So they had all these like breadcrumbs that people were digging up of like, who are these guys? Like they don't even market and they're been working with these huge institutions. So early 2019, I started to step into the crypto Twitter land, which at the time, at least in the Chainlink community on crypto Twitter, it was just a few dozen green frogs. Really, it was a very tight-knit community, very passionate, very smart, dedicated people, but it was a few dozen frogs. And I saw that within the broader crypto community, people did not understand oracles. Like people know blockchains, they've been around for a long time, they generally understand that model, but Oracle networks and especially like decentralized oracles, nobody really understood it. So I basically took the reins or decided like, okay, I'm going to educate people on what oracles are. So I started doing tweet threads. I started writing blogs. I started writing this content. And when Chainlink launched on mainnet and then DeFi summer happened the year after, Chainlink started getting on the radar of a lot of people. And there was just so much FUD and misinformation about Chainlink because people did not understand oracles. So I tried to dispel as much information as much misguided context about Chainlink and oracles as much as I could. But it was like a whole community effort of people, but I was just like one of the many frogs just educating people at the time. But eventually I got this following over time of people listening to me, and I kind of just absorbed and made it my whole life effectively. Yeah. So it was really a journey of education.
What is for people who have not spent time on crypto Twitter much, the Link Marines are probably the strongest community, I would say, of any community in crypto. I mean, you like post any Chainlink FUD and you will have about 1,000 replies within an hour. How does this community, like, how do you guys mobilize? And like, what are the secrets kind of what's the behind the scenes, Zach, of how this community came to be and like how you guys stayed so strong?
I think the main thing for a lot of people when they saw Chainlink, they saw something like a project that was going to continue to exist in 10 years and was going to be a pillar of how crypto operates. So everyone has this like longer term vision. They know that Chainlink's a fundamentally important technology. So a lot of people are passionate about that because they see the weird, crazy things that go on in crypto all the time, but they know that Chainlink is going to be this cornerstone protocol and project. And so like when the community was created, like I mentioned, like the team didn't do any communication or like marketing in 2018. They were heads down building the code itself. And so the community self-organized and came up with these narratives and just in general, how like 4chan and Biz operates. Like it's a very chaotic, a very noisy environment. They basically assume every project's a scam unless proven otherwise. And so Chainlink kind of went through this gauntlet of fire effectively and yet came out the other side. And people, like when you try to tear a project apart and you like discover it's more important than you thought it was, you start to get like really strong conviction in that project itself. So a lot of people see Chainlink as this, I call it like the golden trio of Bitcoin, Ethereum, Chainlink protocols that provide arguably more value and more tangible utility to the ecosystem than any other project. And people just naturally have a strong conviction. So there's not really like a essentially coordinated aspect of the community. It's very decentralized, where like memes and ideas will spread, and the ones that are sticky will continue to replicate over time. And like whether the memes are at times can be off-putting to people at times, and those are the ones I don't like leaning into so much. But in general, it's just everyone has this super strong conviction in Chainlink, and they propagate these ideas through memes. And I think a lot of people know the Chainlink community through like the memetic power, the memetic power that the community itself has. So it's very like self-organized. Yeah. There's not like a central place for it.
When you look across the whole industry, what do you think what do you think of like one or two other communities who have just done a phenomenal job?
I think the Ethereum community is very interesting because they just put everything out in the open, like everything good, everything bad. Everyone develops out in the open. There's not one team. There's like this collection of different client teams working together. Everyone, it's like a very decentralized community, like similar to Chainlink. Like everyone has their own memes that they come up with, whether it's like Ultrasound Money or something else. But I feel like that's always a good shining example of a solid community. I think Bitcoin, that one's like a very controversial community, since obviously you have like the Bitcoin maximalists, but they have just extreme conviction, and they have their approach of just, they know that Bitcoin is going to be like the predominant asset within crypto itself, and they're going to do everything to make sure that other people see that vision itself. So I think those two are like the shining examples probably within the industry, but I think there's other very tight-knit, very niche communities. I think like the Arbitrum community is very, like I've talked to a lot of developers within the Arbitrum community, and they're very like, they work very closely with one another, and it's the communities that are very collaborative with one another are usually the most effective. If everyone's just focused on like shilling or promoting a token price, then those communities just, they don't last, because market cycles usually shake them out over time. So every community has like some energy to it, but I don't see any other community that's, it's so driven towards the truth like the Chainlink community is, and so passionate, and so loud. It's honestly been very, very cool to see how the Chainlink community's evolved to so many people at this point over time.
How do you think the Chainlink community has, for folks who are not maybe as in the community as you are, like how has the community evolved over time?
Yeah, there was like a lot of it was, like I mentioned, like a lot of it was born within the biz forums itself, but most of it has transitioned over to crypto Twitter itself. But I've seen a lot of people shift more and more towards basically trying to get people to see why institutions would be onboarded through Chainlink itself. Like DeFi is always like a cornerstone for Chainlink itself, and a lot, it's powered most of the DeFi ecosystem. But I think for a lot of the community, they know that when institutions start to step in, Chainlink is going to be the predominant protocol that they're going to be used onboarding, whether to connect their backend system, whether to connect different data inputs so that their tokenized assets would be useful. But in general, I still, even as years later, I feel like people get into Chainlink for the same reason, that Chainlink is working with the largest institutions. It's arguably the most useful technology within the entire ecosystem and space itself. And over the long term, there's a real value capture opportunity to be the ultimate connectivity or interoperability layer between all these layers. So even though the memes have evolved, there's way more people in the community, the shift, the focus has shifted a little bit more towards institutions and tokenized asset adoption, it's still the same fundamental reasons why people care about Chainlink. And they know that this is going to be a long-term project that's not going to go away anytime soon. So a lot's changed, but at the same time, fundamentally, not a lot either.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. What, I guess going back to your doc, Zach, like, what do you think what were the toughest parts of being, and I guess what were the pros and cons of being an anonymous person, of being an anon?
I mean, the pros, people usually stick to the ideas you say versus the person you are. They don't dig into your background necessarily as much. My sense is, for most people, by default, you should probably be anonymous or have a pseudonym. Like, there's not, unless you have a good reason to be doxed or have an identity.
You think most people by default should be anonymous?
Within crypto Twitter, I think so, yeah. Unless you're trying to... Thing is, like, it really just comes down to people stick to your ideas versus your identity itself. Like, your background identity really shouldn't matter if your ideas themselves are good, unless you're trying to go speak on stage or you're trying to create like a brand or trying to create more of like an educational campaign for people. But if you're just trying to absorb information, then there's not really a great reason why you should be doxxed in the first place. I feel like by default, it's usually just the safe.
Interesting. Approach. I guess it's, I mean, my take on that would be it lends credibility, like in a space where there's so many scams and so much like, I don't know, just like bad stuff out there. I feel like, because it's, there's like, you know, inherently it's a new industry, but then money has also entered the scene, and new industries are inherently kind of crazy and speculative and filled with scams and stuff. But now when you add money into the layer, like it's even worse in crypto sometimes. And when you have a real, like a, you know, real person, I'm putting quotes around this, like with an actual face, like a doxed person, then it kind of lends a little bit of credibility to like what that person's saying. But I don't know, maybe you haven't found that.
Yeah, and there's a degree of accountability where what you say and what you do is going to be sticking with your true identity over time. You can't just like, you can't just delete the account and then you're basically gone forever. But at the same time, some of the biggest like bad actors in our industry have been doxed people, like SBF and like 3AC and like a lot of these other entities. But in general, yeah, if you're going to be doing something sketchy, then you might be inclined to be more anon itself. But I think the vast majority of people who get into crypto, they're not trying to be sketchy. They're just trying to invest, or they're trying to learn about projects. And in that sense, I feel like there's a whole nother aspect of like when you're pseudonymous, you can kind of brand yourself around a certain project and signal that you're aligned with a certain project. So like within the Chainlink community, that's like hexagons, that's cubes, that's like frogs. So it's like a really easy way to signal that you're in this clique, you're in this community itself. And I see that across a lot of different ecosystems. But ultimately, like it's a personal decision whether you want to dox or not. Like each one of them is going to have trade-offs if you want to tie your real-world identity to what you're doing. And I feel like I'm at a stage where I've always been passionate about Chainlink, and it seems like it's the right stage to just be able to speak at other venues, and I can't do that if I'm in it. So that was like really the forcing function for me to move towards reaching more people and reaching people more broadly.
I've always thought the best way to grow an audience on Twitter, like if I were starting new, I would say start as an anonymous person, as an anon, and I would basically try to own a super specific niche, right? I'd be like the person who just tweets about Arbitrum developers better than anybody else in the world, or the person who tweets about restaking better than anyone else in the world, and grow that account to like, I don't know, 50, 100,000 followers. And then once it's time to actually like, maybe, I don't know, you want to go start a company or something, then you dox. So I think you've done a pretty good job at that.
And one other thing I would add is it's kind of a one-way door. If you start anon, you can go doxed. If you're doxed, you can't really go anon. So if you prefer that type of optionality,
yeah,
it's like a natural evolution. You can't really go the other
way. Another option though is you could have two, like I think a lot of big DeFi founders, I don't really know many investors who have this, but a lot of the big DeFi founders have like, you know, kind of shit posting anon accounts as well with tens of thousands of followers, and people just don't know that anon account is, you know, insert founder. So
yeah, it's not super surprising. Like once you reach a certain status, you can't be shit posting on main.
Exactly.
At a certain point.
Anything else on the docs that I'd be curious, like how long you were thinking about this, and maybe I asked about pros and cons of being an anon. Like what are the pros and cons of being Zach Rhines instead of being Chainlink God?
Yeah, I mean, obviously people are going to know who I am and they may dig into my background. Is what it is. Like that is just kind of something you have to accept. I have thought about it for quite a while and was thinking about what the right time would be. And it seems natural, just everything I've seen in crypto accelerating, what I've seen with Chainlink accelerating with institutions. I don't necessarily want to see like the first entry point into the community to be like an anon frog. At least for me personally, I feel like it's more natural to just see like a quote unquote brand ambassador, to be like a human and somebody you can connect with and hop on a call with and talk with as a human. That kind of seemed like a natural point for me, but there's probably like more unknown unknowns. Like you never truly know what's going to happen until you just rip off the bandaid and you make the shift over. But for me, it seemed like a very logical time and a logical decision for me to make at this time. But ultimately, it'll be interesting to be like the doxed person within a community where a lot of people are anonymous. I'm not saying other people need to dox, like people who want to stay pseudonymous, that's perfectly fine with me. But in general, I think it'll be interesting to see if other people make the shift at the same time. Because I think there's been other people who've also moved from being doxed to undoxed, but I don't know if that's a super common theme within our industry for the most part. At least maybe there's other examples, but I haven't seen that happen so often. So there wasn't a whole lot of other examples for me to really look at to see what happens.
Yeah. Are you in the community of all the other big anon people, and you guys have all like you know, Telegram group together and you kind of know who they are, but no one else is doxxed?
There's people I've met in person, like at SmartCon last year, I met some people in the community, and they're fantastic. They're awesome fucking people. But there's like different group channels. There's different like Telegram groups, different Twitter groups. Like there's not necessarily one group. There's a bunch of different groups, but like some people I've connected with in the Chainlink community over like a number of years. And so we've met up in person, like very, very tight knit, but on Twitter, like I'm not going to dox them. Right. And like, it's up to them to make their decision and they don't have to make that move if they don't want to make that move. So,
yeah.
But when you connect with people over the years, you just naturally meet up.
Awesome, man. Anything else on the docs that you want to share? I want to talk about Chainlink as well, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to talk about Chainlink as well. I think the only other thing is I still feel like, I mean, people know blockchains very intuitively very well and not so much oracles. And I've never seen myself as like the only educator within the Chainlink community itself. There's a lot of good people and a lot of education. And you don't have to move towards being docs if you want to educate people on Chainlink. Like doing tweet threads, doing podcasts, doing blog posts, like you don't have to, the identity behind that doesn't necessarily matter. What matters is the information itself. I just see like me revealing my identity as an opportunity to go to other venues and start expanding the breadth of information that I can share and where I can share that information. But I encourage everybody to share, not even necessarily just about Chainlink, whatever project you're passionate in, educate people as much as possible, because as this bull market starts to ramp up, which I feel like it will, there's going to be so many more people entering our ecosystem who's just not going to know all the nuances that people who have been here for years have picked up over time. So I would just recommend everybody educate about the projects you're passionate about, because it'll pay dividends for that community for sure.
What do you think of what does the Oracle landscape look like today? Because I feel like basically Chainlink, people don't like using the word monopoly, but like Chainlink kind of owned the whole market, I would say, in Oracles. And this year there's been, or the last 12 months, there's been kind of a rise of some other Oracles have come onto the scene, right? People like Chronicle, people like Pith. I'd be curious how you see like the state of kind of the Oracle market today.
Yeah, a lot of people know Oracles because of price feeds. That was like the initial product market fit of Oracles. Chainlink launched price feeds back in 2019, and that eventually led to DeFi Summer accelerating as it did. But I think we're at the stage where I think people are looking at what else can Oracles be used for, because fundamentally Oracles are just middleware that connects systems together. And so connecting financial market data onto blockchains, that's like the first use case, even though it's a very challenging. It sounds simple. You just pull the price and put it on chain, but what is the price of an asset? Where do you get that? How do you filter it? How do you aggregate it is actually a pretty nuanced problem. So there's interesting different approaches of doing that. There's like the traditional push-based feeds that Chainlink has always done, where data is pumped on chain every so often to update this reference contract people can pull from. There's been interesting approaches taken with pull-based oracles, where you make that data available off-chain and users can pull it and put it on chain themselves whenever they want, so you get the freshest data. I've seen different Oracle platforms move towards that model, but I feel like a lot of projects are still trying to focus on price feeds. A lot of the Oracles are just, how do we do price feeds but tweak this small thing? How do we do price feeds but we're on this network? Or we do this data set that other Oracles don't. And I feel like there's areas for innovation, but that's not super interesting to me. Right, what I see is interesting is Oracles expanding out to doing off-chain computation or doing cross-chain interoperability, because even like cross-chain bridges, in my mind, they're just Oracle networks where a blockchain's the data source. They're just Oracle networks. So really the whole cross-chain space is also within the Oracle space itself, even if people don't see that. And there's a whole lot of innovation happening in the cross-chain space. But I think where people get tied up, like when they compare, like how does Chainlink compare to Pith, or how does it compare to Gelato, or how does it compare to Chronicle, whoever, I think the core difference with Chainlink is that Chainlink is trying to become a platform of different services. So you have things like price feeds, you have verifiable randomness, you have proof reserves, automation, you have cross-chain with CCIP. Like it's trying to be this decentralized AWS platform where you have all these services that you can compose together into one application, regardless of the chain you're on. And honestly, I don't see anyone else taking the same approach as Chainlink in that regard. So like Chainlink's an oracle, but I feel like using that term has like preconceived notions of like price data or just data in general, but really it's just this complementary computation layer that attaches onto blockchains to make smart contracts more useful and more connected to these external resources. So I feel like price feeds are interesting, but what's really interesting is just the platform that you can create. And then once you start bridging with people beyond the DeFi ecosystem is when like you start really playing with fire.
Honestly, I think Chainlink is one of the best kept secrets in crypto in terms of like how good of a business model they have, right? Like if you look at how much some of the L2s are paying Chainlink, it is a remarkable amount of money, right? It's well into the tens of millions a year. At least from, I've never talked to the Chainlink team about this. So I've never verified those numbers on both sides, but if, you know, some of the L2 founders I've spoken with say that they're paying Chainlink, you know, 20, 25, 30, $35 million a year, because they need to get the apps and the products to come build on them. And if Chainlink isn't there, it's just not like, then the app is just going to choose somewhere else. So it's a pretty remarkable business that they've been able to build.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone else is trying to take the same approach at all, but there is a case, like if you don't have Chainlink on your blockchain, then yeah, you can't really have lending applications. You can't have derivatives. You can't have these applications. And I feel like there will be other protocols that try to do the same thing, and they'll move faster and they'll be cheaper. But ultimately, like why protocols use Chainlink is not just because it's the standard and it's what everyone uses, but because of like when you choose to integrate with Chainlink, you know it's going to work. So like you can cheap out and go with a cheaper solution, but if it ends up breaking and it kills your whole ecosystem, then saving the amount of money that you could have paid to Chainlink to get an integration, probably not worth it. Like just like examples in terms of bridges, like when multi-chain and these other bridges got hacked, it wrecked blockchains. Like it really hurt those blockchains and stunted their growth for a really long time, which is like a really awful situation. But I think that that's like with Chainlink, you're effectively paying for the quality and you're paying for the premium that if you're going to integrate Chainlink, you're not going to regret that later because your system's going to keep operating its design. Your ecosystem has all the secure access to these resources that you know that developers need at the end of the day. But ultimately, I still feel like DeFi is like a case study for what's actually going to happen with institutions. When they start tokenized assets and bringing those on chain, they'll use the same infrastructure. They'll know it works because it was already proven in DeFi. But then when they tokenize different bonds, different equity, different stocks or whatever assets, they basically hot swap those into these protocols, maybe with more permissions and these other additional layers that they need for compliance. But I think that's like the end case. And I think that's ultimately what Chainlink's building for, while making sure that the DeFi ecosystem in its current state continues to thrive and continues to grow itself.
Zach, completely off topic. Has anyone ever told you look like Sergey?
Is it the beard or is it the flannel?
I don't know. I get very Sergey vibes from you, actually. I didn't know if you guys were related or anything.
No, I'm not. I'm not Sergey's son.
are you inspired by the flannel or the beard?
I honestly always used to wear flannels, but the beard I grew within like the past couple of years. But it's not because of Sergey.
It's not because of Sergey. All right,
no, it's fair. Not.
Nice. I just had to ask. What is the role of Link in so the way I understand it and the way you describe it is like, okay, people used to see Chainlink as like nice Oracle service providing data to a bunch of, you know, the biggest dApps and most dApps that people use, like the price data is supplied by Chainlink in one way or another. I think that's how people used to think of like, or think of the old Chainlink. The way I understand it in your mind is, or basically Chainlink has evolved to become this platform for data, for compute, for cross-chain. We can talk about CCIP as well, obviously. What is the role of the Link token in this whole network?
Yeah, I'll set some context because I think one thing to also answer is like, why does decentralized infrastructure even need a token in the first place? Why can't we just use cash or ETH and everything? Fundamentally, like when you create a new decentralized network, you have the users on one side and then you have the infrastructure on the other. But nodes aren't going to join a network if it's not profitable for them to join the network, and users aren't going to pay to use a network if there aren't already nodes operating in that network. So you kind of have this cold start problem where if you have no usage, you have no infrastructure, how do you bootstrap that? And the cool thing with tokens is that they trade on the market. And so you can use tokens to subsidize the supply side, create this network of nodes that are individually profitable to attract the users, and the users start paying fees. And then eventually over time, the goal is that you can actually reduce that inflation to nodes. So it's just fees going from users to infrastructure, and you have this whole sustainable ecosystem. So fundamentally, like blockchains, Oracle networks, decentralized infrastructure, it cannot exist without having a token in the first place, because it can't even be bootstrapped into existence. It's like fundamentally you need a token, but that doesn't necessarily mean the token is accrues value. And so that's kind of the other aspect with Link, where I think of it really in two prongs. One, it's the payment token. So similar to ETH on Ethereum, you pay with Link to use to consume the services. Chainlink's building towards something called payment abstraction, where you can actually pay with non-Link like ETH or BNB or Matic and these other tokens that go into the system and eventually get converted to Link and then paid out to the service providers. So as a developer, you don't even have to like touch or even know that the Link token exists, which is really good for developer adoption and for institutions who want to pay in like stable coins and traditional assets. And ultimately, like paying with that token means those service providers have a financial incentive to be honest, because they're paid in that network's native token. If the network's malicious or gets corrupted, the token not only can be slashed, and I'll get that into a second, but it can be devalued. And so what these nodes get paid in and what they hold is tied to the health of the network itself. So that's why if you launch a new independent L1 blockchain, you're not going to necessarily use ETH as like the core currency for everything, not only because you can't issue more ETH to pay and subsidize nodes, but if your network gets corrupted, ETH won't get devalued because of that. But the other side is staking, where this is still being fleshed out more and more, but that's just node operators putting up Link as collateral to back their services and getting slashed if they're malicious. The theory really is like eventually over time, every Oracle node operator will basically be the same performance, security, reliability wise. So how do they differentiate each other? And that comes down to how much staked collateral that they can offer either themselves or it's like through delegation models. That's like a differentiating factor. And as Chainlink becomes more and more of like a self-service, build your own Oracle network, easier to consume marketplace, then that becomes a very easy way to choose node operators. It's like historical metrics, what jobs they support, can they even do what you want them to do? And how much collateral, how much skin in the game that do they have? Skin in the game, both like, can they be slashed and just they own the token. So they have like their incentive is aligned with the network itself. And so I feel like people get why tokens are used in blockchains because they pay for gas in them and they have to use them. Chainlink is infrastructure that's used by developers. So if I go use Aave, I don't need to go get Link to use Aave. So it seems like the token's not used, even if in the background, the services like CCIP still use Link, even if it's converted from other value itself. So there's like a bit of a knowledge gap there. The economics is still like it's being fleshed out more and more, and not everything's necessarily super easy to track the flows, but Chainlink's working on like building more and more of this unified billing where every service has like a unified billing interface. And so you can consume any service with like a single balance itself. But that's something that's like still being fleshed out and worked out over time.
Hmm. Can you just expand on CCIP?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think everyone's seen how brutal bridge hacks have been over the years, 2.8 billion. I believe the number is lost in total, which is just absolutely horrific for industry. So CCIP really exists to solve that problem and operates not only at the highest level of security, but operate with features like risk management network, where CCIP isn't actually like a single network for cross-chain interoperability, but it's actually multiple networks connecting each of the chains, plus an independent risk management network that basically monitors all the activity and can shut down the network if any abnormal activity happens. But I feel like most people look at bridges and they think like I can move shitcoins from chain A to chain B, which is useful. I also need to move my shitcoins from chain A to chain B. But I think really, it really just comes back to institutions for me is it's not only the interoperability of being able to connect all the DeFi, like all the public blockchains together and being able to connect all the private chains together. Once we're able to connect those two worlds together into one ecosystem, you really need standards on both sides because they will be built in silos initially just because of regulations and other business factors. But if each side is using the same standard, they can easily interoperate with one another. Plus, I don't think a lot of people realize, but with CCIP, you actually have this capability of using CCIP as like an abstraction layer. So if an institution wants to connect to 100 chains, they don't want to connect to 100 chains individually. That's just extremely complicated, costly, and you have to manage so many different gas tokens on so many different chains. But if they integrate Chainlink once, they can actually interact with smart contracts on any blockchain just through CCIP itself. So like that's something that institutions have signaled and said, like that's a huge feature for them of CCIP and the Chainlink platform itself. It's just the ability to connect to every blockchain and use their existing backend systems and existing messaging standards like Swift messaging. They don't have to replace their backend system. They just connect to CCIP and be able to either bridge assets between different chains or be able to just interact with any chain that they want itself. So like there's a whole like DeFi segment of CCIP and there's a whole like institutional tokenized asset segment of CCIP. And, you know, eventually they'll merge over time. Is like that's like the ultimate goal of the protocol.
What's the counter argument for all this, Zach? Like if Chainlink didn't work, why would that be? If crypto did work, but Chainlink didn't make it, what's the reason for that?
I mean, fundamentally, it would be some other platform that does what Chainlink does, but 10 times better, like in every regard. Because if you have a like an alternative solution that's slightly better or is slightly different, usually the switching costs aren't worth it. But so it's really just having a different platform that's like fundamentally better. It's cheaper, it's faster, it's more secure. That feels like a very tall order to me, just given how much of a head start Chainlink has had. But like no protocol is infallible. Like if Chainlink stopped developing today and just had the services it had forever and never changed it, yeah, it would eventually get overtaken by a competitor. But yeah, Chainlink's not going to stop building either. They're going to keep building new products and improving the products based on feedback. So like in my mind, the trajectory of where Chainlink is going would have to like fundamentally change and like ignore what user feedback is or something to like seriously break. But like I don't feel like that's super likely, but obviously no protocol is like going to be like, I don't think anyone right now can declare themselves to be the definitive winner. We're still so early. I wouldn't even say Bitcoin is a definitive winner yet. I think it's getting there. I think it's very clear, like for institutions who are stepping in now, but like every protocol cannot rest on their laurels just because they were successful. They need to continue to keep innovating. They need to continue improving their services. So it's like, we're not at the end game just yet. So I think that would be like a failure case scenario for Chainlink.
Yeah. Zach, what percentage of your net worth is held in Link?
Probably an amount that would make most people uncomfortable.
Actually going into at the top of 20... You remember when Chainlink had that crazy run up from like $3 to 15 to like 30 to 60? You remember that? So yeah,
pre-DeFi summer even.
The Link that I had bought when I was sitting next to that guy, Mike, I had just put it in some ledger and like just forgotten about it. And all the other things I bought then like had gone to, it was like Omise Go and Civic and all these other randomized, Bloom, they all zeroed out. And so I just had forgotten about the ledger. And then Link started to go from, you know, it was like 20 cents to $2 to $20. I was like, told my wife, I was like, stop everything. We have to find this ledger, like turn the whole house upside down. I have a soft spot in my heart for the Link Marines just from like my early days of Link experience. So that's cool, man. That's very cool. Anything else that you're really excited about outside of Chainlink?
It feels like, I mean, we just saw the Denkun upgrade on Ethereum with rollups.
Yeah, yeah.
That was pretty massive. Like it's like sub-cent transactions on rollups for now. It'll like the usage will even out over time. But I've always been super interesting. Like I've been following rollups for a long time back before like they were even really called rollups. Like I was following Plasma as well, which they weren't rollups, but that was like the precursor to rollups themselves. That's always been a very interesting ecosystem to watch. Like now we're just seeing it accelerate. Now we have DA layers with Celestia and EigenDA. We have like these settlement rollups for other rollups to settle upon. Like it's getting very complicated very quickly. Now we have rollup as a service providers to try to abstract away all that complexity. That ecosystem has always been very interesting to me. There's always a place in my heart for like a Solana style approach of just, let's just do a single chain. Let's just scale that one chain, make it as high throughput as possible. But it feels like the most intuitive approach is to take the module approach. Everyone specializes and then you compose together different parts of the tech stack from execution, settlement, consensus, and you compose it all together into one blockchain. That has always seemed like a very intuitive approach to me. And I'm really like, I'm very tired of paying extremely high Ethereum gas costs for so long. So I'm happy to be more of an L2 user. And now we're seeing like people looking into doing rollups on Bitcoin L2s as well, which I think they're like a few years behind what Ethereum is doing, but that's always been like infrastructure wise, super interesting. Like tokenized assets, I've seen different projects do like they're tokenizing T-bills. That's always been like a super popular use case. Yield bearing stable coins like Athena is interesting, but I'm also very cautious about its design just in terms of the assumptions it makes about perp markets. And like I know it's not custody at centralized exchanges, but to me, it just feels like that's not a model that can necessarily scale super large. But like, I don't want, it's not Terra Luna style, but I'm always cautious of a stable coin becoming huge and then, you know, winding down in an extremely reckless and disastrous way. I feel very similar about restaking in that whole LRT ecosystem. That's a whole like another rabbit hole where like there's clearly a lot of interest in doing restaking, but at the same time, I can't help but feel very unnerved by the rehypothecation and using LRTs and DeFi itself. Like it's, there's a right way to do it, but I've seen how things play out in crypto before. It just gets degen. People want to make money.
It does. It does. Zach, man, I'm excited for you to dox. So we're releasing this on Monday. So the plan is, so you'll have doxed today. What do you think I don't know. Like, have you thought about the kind of second order implications of doing this and what this means for like your life, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, things that I have more private, maybe not become as private before. I think most people would be like, I feel like most people would be pretty accepting of it. There's always going to be like trolls and whatnot, but I have thick skin. I've dealt with that over many years over the internet itself. I think really just comes down to like partitioning my time. Like what I want to scale more into is speaking more at like conferences. And ideally that's a door that opens up significantly for me in doing other podcasts and doing like, more educational platforms. But, you know, I don't know until I rip off the Band-Aid and then, you know, see how people ultimately react to it.
Cool. Well, I'm excited for you, man. Anything else that you really wanted to cover today?
I mean, I think one thing, like I've seen different people talk about the ecosystem being either it's going to be multi-chain or it's going to be cross-chain. To me, it feels like it's inevitable that the whole ecosystem is going to just converge towards being cross-chain itself, just in terms of the UX itself. Like, One of the primary issues that I've always seen within the space has just been the friction of using crypto, like the UX of crypto. Like I have huge gripes with MetaMask just in terms of the UX that it offers, but like there's going to be a million different chains out there and there's going to be a million different gas tokens out there and people are going to want a bridge between those different chains itself. So like there needs to be abstraction solutions out there. And I feel like CCIP is a major abstraction solution. You just interact with CCIP and you can move both tokens and data to other blockchains. And you can, like, if you're an Arbitrum, you can move your tokens over to Optimism and stake them and then generate yield and then bridge them back to you as like a wrapped format. Like you could do all these really cool things with CCIP and cross-chain. Then you have things like account abstraction. So people don't even have to actually touch gas tokens and they can just interact with like stable coins and then they pay through and it gets converted on the back end. So it feels like the whole industry is moving towards abstraction. And that's always been my thesis of Chainlink itself. Like the end state is that most people would be using smart contracts in Chainlink without actually even realizing they're using Chainlink or smart contracts themselves. Mm. It would all be abstract in the background. It's kind of like if you use like Netflix or streaming services, you don't ask like what cloud service is this running on? Like, am I using AWS or like I can only use Azure? Like nobody cares about that. So people are very tribalistic about what chains they use. I don't think the vast majority of users will ultimately care. Really, just you got to be blockchain agnostic.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, to support the whole ecosystem.
Yeah. Zach, man, formerly known as Chainlink God, appreciate you. I'm excited for your big docs day, and rooting for you, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I'm always happy to talk about Chainlink and different things.